appreciate that very much, too. Little did I know when the Hutch News used to take after me on a daily basis how helpful that would be. It sort of prepared me for other papers that have come along. Maybe with a larger circulation, but certainly no stiffer editorial page in the Hutchinson News. And though we've had our disagreements, I think we've, I'm not talking about the Mr. McDonald's, we sort of see things pretty much the same, but I'm talking about editorial policies. It indicates, again, that we can have our differences and still have the same goals in mind, maybe some different approach, but I certainly am pleased to be here and pleased to be introduced by a fellow Kansan. I'll check with him how we're doing in Kansas after I speak. Maybe I should check before I speak, but we've now been on the campaign trail. Someone figured up 41 days, and we've been on the road 34 of those 41 days. We sort of put our campaign together up in the air, and there's some who suggest that's still where it is, but we're still working on it. We still believe that the election is going to be very close, and of course I'd be less than candid if I didn't say that we were going to win. We just see it that way. Some here may see it differently. Some may not see it at all. Some may believe that the campaign itself doesn't offer much opportunity to any Americans. We're questioned almost daily or every other day about the voter turnout. Will it be more than 50%? Will it be less than 50%? Which seems to me to be a sad commentary, perhaps on the parties, perhaps on the candidates, but perhaps on all of us who try to communicate with the voter out there, whether it be Democrat, Republican, or Independent. So we're hoping that come November 2nd, there'll be so much enthusiasm generated by the Dole Lawndale debate that everyone's going to vote. Or that no one will vote. Either way, we figure it's about a draw. Now, our debate will take place next Friday. You'll all be attending a high school football game, but it will be on television. It may be reported the following day. There may be polls taken, but I would guess it probably wouldn't change many votes across the country. I understand now that 45% of the people know who I am, 55% know who the other fellow is, and we know each other. So from that standpoint, it promises to be interesting. We hope somewhat different. There's one big improvement in our debate. It's going to be 15 minutes less in length than the first two debates. I thought it would be even better for an hour long, but some who've been in the Senate like more time. We always compromise in the Senate, so we agreed to 75 minutes. And I think we can put most people to sleep in less time than the leaders of our tickets. I don't say that critically because I think people go to sleep on both sides. So we've had a great experience, and I hope it continues for more than another 3.5 weeks. We're looking forward to another 4 years, but in any event, when I was in Kansas City, a member of the platform committee, I didn't really realize that I would be on the ticket, and we've had all kinds of suggestions on how it happened, and some wondering why it happened, and I've been saying, you know, with more frequency, they're wondering why it happened. It's been suggested that the president, after an all-night session where they were deadlocked, got up in the morning and flipped a coin and it didn't come down, and he decided that I was probably the fellow who could best serve America, whether it be rural America or whatever. Other suggestions were that a lot of people drank pineapple juice and that pineapple juice was probably as good for you as peanut butter, and that's why I got on the ticket. For one thing, pineapple juice doesn't stick to the roof of your mouth, as we've been telling people across the country. But for whatever reason, we've been working for President Ford, and I've been, before I even said a word to anyone in America except my wife, I was characterized as a hatchet man and the hit man. I don't know how that could have happened, but somehow I was depicted and characterized as a gunslinger. I'm going to go out and chew up Jimmy Carter the first week, and And later I was tabbed, a tabby cat by Time Magazine and others for not doing enough. So I guess it's the same story. If you come on too strong or maybe not strong enough. But it's been my view in the campaign that it's really starting about now. Right now we're in just a bit of a slump. We think it's bottomed out, and that's not just because of the Butts affair, but it's another little thing happened in the debate the other night that caused just some slight depression. But it seems to me that if you're going to have those things happen, it's better they happen now than in the last 10 days of the campaign. I want to say just a word about Governor Carter, and then maybe we'll ask some questions and we'll mail you the answers. But one thing I've been saying, wherever I can have an audience, we don't need large audiences. Like this is a very large audience. Being a Republican, we're not used to this many people assembling. We'll do our best. We've been talking about the mass of contradictions in the Carter campaign and in the candidate himself and what he said and then what he said the next day. And I've said, you know, we're having three debates so that he can give all of his issues, all of his positions on each issue on three separate nights. And I frankly turned on all three TV sets the first night thinking I might get all of his positions at once. But then I learned that it was a pool arrangement and we all got the same picture. And that's sort of the way it's been. And I believe the American people are entitled to know, as are members of this fine association, to know what the contradictions are. Now, Governor Carter has been all over the lot on defense, but I recall Mr. Franklin's first question, which sort of set the theme for the evening. You probably all heard it or read it. And he said, Governor, since the Democrats last ran our foreign policy, including many of the men who are advising you, the country has been relieved of the Vietnam agony, the military draft. We've started arms control negotiations with the Russians. We've opened up relations with China. We've arranged a disengagement in the Middle East. We've regained influence with the Arabs without deserting Israel. Now maybe we've begun the process of peaceful change in Africa. Now you've objected in this campaign to the style in which much of this was done. And you've mentioned some other things that you think ought to have been done. But do you really have a quarrel with this Republican record? Would you not have done any of those things? Well, that was the opening question. And then, of course, Governor Carter talked about Watergate, inflation, unemployment, and everything else, but what was inherent in the question, which was his right. But he simply refused to answer the question. Instead, he criticized the president's style and of course, kept up the same vein all evening. As far as the substance of the debate, my analysis was that the president won, and that was sustained by at least one poll I can think of, which said that 53 to 23 felt the president knew more about foreign policy. But I'd have to confess that on the political side, I thought Carter had a slight edge, and most polls indicate that he did have a slight edge. Well, I wanted to touch on one thing that Carter said the other night, flatly, that he hadn't said. He accused President Ford of an untruth, and that's the so-called $15 billion defense cut statement, which he indicates he has not made. And I think perhaps if we look at the record, we talk about how it reported in the Los Angeles Times and the Savannah Times when the statement was made. Governor Carter goes before an audience of 100 million on television and in effect says, the president's lying. That's not what I said. I think the American people have a right to know that that's what he did say. That's what he's reported to have said. And we understand those who reported the incident stand behind their remarks, which is not unknown among journalistic efforts. But we seem to get that same old rerun Governor Carter. Who do you trust? Well, I think his version of this leaves some room for audience participation. And the audience are all those voters out there who get undecided. And I'm not certain Johnny Carson's right, but he sort of claims that Carter will get nearly all the undecided votes because he's so undecided himself. Now, that may or may not be the case. We're not going to even see the undecided vote to Governor Carter. But I think we have to leave it to the president or to the American people on where they should make their choice and how they should make their choice. I want to call attention to another little bit of misinformation the other night, and I'm certain all of you have analyzed the debates carefully and probably have a better fix on who was accurate, who may have been inaccurate. I've heard something about Eastern Europe, which would indicate there was some slight inaccuracy on the part of President Ford. But take, for example, this quote of Governor Carter Wednesday night. He said, as a matter of fact, Iran is going to get F-14 before we even meet our own Air Force order for F-14. Well, that sort of made me wonder. Do we really give preference to Iran over our own military? I was sure it couldn't be true, so I checked. And I was reminded the Air Force doesn't use F-14s. There is no Air Force order for F-14s. We have to meet. The F-14 is a Navy plane. Deliveries of the F-14 to the United States Navy are right on track with program requirements. By the end of 1976, when Iranian deliveries begin, the United States Navy will have received 271 F-14s, with more scheduled to be delivered over the next 4 years through 1980. When it comes to facts and figures, Carter is hardly the answer man. At one point in the debate, he said, we are shipping to Iran, or contracted to ship to Iran, about $7.5 billion worth of arms. And this was his statement, of course. At another point, he said, we are shipping the same dollar amount of arms to Saudi Arabia. Well, I don't know where he got those figures, so we've been trying to determine. It's one of the big mysteries in this campaign. I think the question of how a man who knows so little got so far, with the support of so few, is the biggest mystery of the entire election year. But nonetheless, questions about the figures and where they came from, I think, is important. I think it's a legitimate question to ask. Because you add up 7.5 and 7.5, that's $15 billion. Maybe that's some coincidence. Maybe he's thinking back to the statement he made in the presence of an LA Times reporter and also Savannah Times, I understand. Maybe that's that defense cut he had in mind. He was going to wipe out that $15 billion. Facts are that in the fiscal year just ended, we did sign sales agreements to sell $2.5 billion of defense equipment to Saudi Arabia, and another sales agreement to sell $1.3 billion worth to Iran. But that's a total of only $3.8 billion. And only $666 million of that, I'm informed, actually constitutes weapons. The rest is for non-weapon sales, such things as construction, maintenance, and technical service. So it's hardly a $15 billion arms package. It turns out to be about $666 million. And I could go on, but I think maybe the questions might be more responsive. I think his use of percentages and trying to imply that we've weakened our support of Israel for the benefit of the Arab states could be discussed. I think perhaps there may be some differences in their foreign policy. He talks about publicizing meetings. I don't know, he suggested that he was going to bring the American people into foreign policy discussions, and he was asked how. And after some little pause, he mentioned fireside chats, and I suggested if he has a fireside chat, the fire will go out. But beyond that, to how do you bring the American people into consultation with a fireside chat? I assume he's going to open up the National Security Council meetings to United Press and other wire services, Playboy, other people who like the inside information or the outdoor information or whatever information. And it just seems to me that those may be the right code words or buzzwords to use. Because there is a feeling in America that there's secrecy and that somehow we're going down the tube. On the other hand, I think by and large, we've had a pretty good story to tell the American people about President Ford. I don't need to tell anyone in this group because you're all sophisticated editors or reporters or others. But President Ford still that same unpretentious man who came to the White House. He's still, I think, a man of decency and honesty and courage. He does stand up against the Congress. He has vetoed 59 pieces of legislation. I don't suggest he's perfect or that I'm perfect or that Carter or Mondale are perfect. I think we both perhaps have somewhat the same objectives. It's just how we may reach those objectives that should be the focus of attention. And I've said, and I'll repeat, and I'll stop, it just seems to me, the President said in his closing statement, we ought to focus on a couple of things, and that's experience and results. And I don't suggest that someone with no experience can't have it, or that someone with no experience can't cut it. But I do suggest that we look at President Ford, who spent 25 years in the Congress, 14 years on the Defense Appropriations Subcommittee, been the Vice President, didn't run for that office, didn't ask for that office, but assumed that office at a rather tragic time in America, and then became the President of the United States in the 2 years, slightly over 2 years, has achieved, I think, rather remarkable success in America. All the catchwords and all the phrases and all the rhetoric from me or Mondale or Carter or Ford really isn't going to change very much between now and Election Day. It's really all out there. The American people, I think, are now in sort of the judging process. We've said about everything we can say. We may sharpen our attacks, they may sharpen their attacks. We'll still try to make certain the American people understand the difference in the candidates. You have a liberal ticket on the one hand and a moderate to conservative ticket on the other. We suggest that's certainly we're fair game and they're fair game. We're sort of in that period when there may be some moving from undecided to Ford or Carter. I don't think there's going to be much movement from Carter to Ford, Ford to Carter in their own group. That's my own view without any statistics to back it up. So we're going to keep plugging away. We're going to keep hoping the polls look up. I'm talking about P-O-L-L-S. And we hope the others overlook. When it's all over, November 2nd, Pete, I want to make an announcement. I'm going to be in Russell, Kansas on Election Day. That'll be worldwide news. We've already booked those rooms in the motel. But beyond that, I don't have any outstanding announcements. I'm just happy to be here, and I need to respond to some questions. If I don't have the answer, I'll probably give you one anyway. So. Polish-American relations signed in 1974. he continues his support, so that it's just a case where I think maybe a word or two would have made a great deal of difference. We wouldn't be miles apart. So I say yes in answer to the question. Anyone else? Yes, sir.
If you say that Carter had a slight edge in the debate, how are you going to make up in the polls between now and November?
Well, I think in the same, I say he had an edge in the politics. It seems to me, and I hope I'm right, I try to be sometimes, that once the American people take a look at the foreign policy debate in particular, I still think any incumbent president is going to get more of that undecided support when it comes to foreign policy. And even one poll taken again, I guess here in Washington, indicated there was a shift from Carter to Ford after the debate, even though they gave Carter the edge politically. And that's sort of how I see it. I think he won a close political victory as far as the debate's concerned. I don't believe it's enough to show up in the polls. But on the other hand, after it settles a while, it's going to indicate to the American people that President Ford does understand foreign policy, that he has been there. I think any incumbent president has an advantage. He has met with foreign leaders. He has visited foreign countries. He is the first president to visit Japan. He has a firm policy in the Mideast. And when the American people are really concerned about this, start adding it up, it's not going to be a minus. I just suggest that right now, and a couple of things happened that we could have done without. They've had them happen, and you don't know who will be next. Yes, sir. I assume so. I don't know. I wasn't there that day, but I knew what was going on. The point is, he said the administration there trying to work out legislation. Now, I don't know whether that happened or not. I assume that could be checked. I was not there. I had no contact with the administration. I don't know what Tower's objection was, whether it came from the administration or whether it was some personal objection. We had some amendments on that bill, too, relating to exports that we were interested in. But the bill didn't pass, so I can't answer the question. I don't know. I understand what happened, but I don't know if that's because of administration contact with Tower. The Tower doesn't need anybody to start him up. And he might have had his own objections. A great many pro-Bob Dole articles appearing. first one was that I was a hatchet man, and then on it went downhill. But, you know, that's the way. I don't suggest that the coverage is adequate.
I just have one more question. There's some discussion about format of the debates. Can you tell us what your format is going to be? And whether you change it, you're changing it yourself. Are you satisfied with the format?
Well, I'm satisfied to the extent that we've reduced the time. We will have opening statements in our debates. They're going to be called opening statements, as compared to contrast to Carter's statement, opening statement in response to a question. You know in advance what I say is an opening statement. I may want to add another one later on, but we may have a mid-statement and a closing statement. I'll give the invocation and he can give the benediction. I think we have a little more flexibility in the format because we can direct questions at one another. Again, I'm not certain. You know, I'm really not certain. The debates, there's a lot of focus on debates, and whether it's Carter or Ford. We see what happens when the president leaves out a word or two. I guess this is one way to judge candidates. You never know the most accurate way is. So we think ours will be a little more flexible. It'll be a little shorter. We hope a little tighter. We'd like to keep those people who are at home tuned in for a while. A lot of them don't know either Bob Doyle or Walter Mondale, so it may not be too exciting for any of them. Another question? Personally, Governor Carter, in many respects, has been a good manager. He reduced his tax liability $42,000. We don't know what his partnership returns show or his corporate returns because he won't reveal those. He's an open and candid man. Won't tell the American people about his corporate returns or his partnership returns, and nobody seems to be going after those, the information on those returns. But he did manage to take $41,000 off his 75 tax liability. That's called the investment tax credit. That is not a loophole, because Carter used it. Had he not used it, probably would have been a loophole, but that's the way these things are, and we understand that. I'm for it. I think it stimulates the economy. That may not have been exactly in response to your question, but I was getting to your question. I'm warming you up for the debate. I think probably more precisely, President Ford has been a pretty good manager. He has reduced the White House staff. He has reduced, in some areas, the number of federal employees. If that's the management you mean, I think it's been good. He's managed to put me on the ticket. It was the right move, of course. And beyond that, I just think President Ford runs a pretty good ship, and he's accessible. I may be in the wrong area of management, but I can contrast that to a few years back. And as I said to some of my friends, I used to call the White House a lot, and I always talked to Bob Haldeman. Well, not always, because he was elevated beyond me. I used to talk to a fellow named Carly, or earlier Carly. And I used to call to say, I want to talk to Nixon. You know, I thought I ought to meet him. I've been the chairman for a year, and we thought we were doing pretty well. We did a picture and put in our scrapbook, and all those sort of things. And so I remember making that request a number of times, and Haldeman called me back one day, and I was a little nervous to think I was getting a call from someone that high up. He said, I understand you want to see the president. I said, I certainly do. He said, well, turn on channel 9 at 7 o'clock. We're all very close in those days. Shakespeare release. I didn't know they were there, but whenever I was asked a question, I just nodded a lot. You know? That's another kind of man. Yes. Give up any rights to defend the canal.